Welcome to our discussion of the amazing and intricate plan of Esther, Mordechai, and God to save the Jewish people. So if we think about, you know, who really is the hero of Megillah, there are, of course, three major candidates and one minor one. Of course, Mordechai, Esther, God himself, who's always behind everything, and there's also Harvona. There's another gentleman who's behind it, but we're not really going to get into that tonight, to that one. We talked about some of these issues when we were dealing with Mrs. Rosenzweig the other week, and we're going to see some of it inside right now. Mordechai's plan is almost humorous. So it says that Vayagilo Mordechai Asher Karahu. They told Mordechai all the things that happened. Parshat HaKesef and the story of the money. Asher Amar Haman Lishkol, that the Haman said he was going to give to the treasury of the king about the Jews to destroy them. And that which was written in the written text that it was okay in Shushan to destroy them and to show Esther the document that said that the Jews were to be destroyed. And Ulahagila to tell her, Utsavodala, to command her, to demand from her, like the word mitzvah. Mordechai is giving a mitzvah to Esther. Lavo, what's the plan? What's Mordechai's brilliant plan? Lavo elamelech l'tchanenlo l'vakesh milfanav alama. To go to the king, to beg from him, and to request from him for her people. That's his plan. That's it. There's nothing else to it. His plan is she should go and beg. Now.
To save the Jews, yeah?
Go beg to save the Jews. Right. That's the plan. Esther's reaction. Everybody knows. All the people know. All the servants in all the kingdoms. They know that any man or woman who comes to the king into the inner chamber who is not called, it's very one law. It's very clear that he should be killed, or she, except you get the silver, the golden scepter, then you live. And I have not been called to the king for 30 days. So lest you say, well, you're the queen. After all, just talk to him. What's the problem? No, I haven't even been there for 30 days. There's a whole harem. There are other women. I'm not important. So you want something to be done right away. Who knows when I'll be called? Maybe it'll be another 30 days. So she rejects the plan. She can't go to beg the king. She hasn't been called. Mordechai's reaction. He says, "You tell Esther, don't think you can escape from all the Jews and hide in the palace. Because if you're silent at this moment, there will be a great salvation that will come to the Jews from another place, perhaps from God, maybe that's what he means. And you and your house will be destroyed. And who knows if it was for this that you were chosen." So what are all the arguments he's making? Number one.
You gotta go. If you don't go, you're gonna be destroyed along with the whole palace. I guess that's what it sounds like to me.
Right.
You have no choice.
Right. The Jews will be saved anyway. Right. Well, that's how you're reading it, to mean that you're gonna be killed as a Jew. Is that what you're saying?
No, you're gonna be killed with the rest of the people in the palace. Or I must have understood something.
No. The people in the palace won't be killed. They're in the palace. Unless you want to say that you'll be killed because you're a Jew. Maybe. But nobody knew she was Jewish. So it's not clear.
Oh.
He's probably not saying that. Most people don't read it the way you're suggesting. They read it this way. That God, the way providence works, you will be lost anyway. You and your whole household. But the Jews will not be lost because Jews do. No one can destroy all the Jews. It's not a possibility. So it says in the Torah that that he may destroy many of us, but he'll never destroy all of us to totally wipe us out. So he knows that for sure. But you will be lost, maybe lost from history. No one will ever remember you. No, you'll be an obscure queen, or you'll just be killed. It's possible that you'd be killed with other Jews who'd be killed. I don't know. And then his second argument is, who knows, maybe it was for a time like this that you became the queen. So Maybe this is providence that you're here and in power, so you can do this. So he has a reaction. Now, did Esther really want to hide? This is Bluma's question the other day to Mrs. Rosenzweig. Mrs. Rosenzweig was implying that until Mordechai gave Esther push and he said this great speech, Esther was thinking, look, I can't go to the king. What am I supposed to do? And then Esther said, okay, I changed my mind. Or no, Esther wanted to help out. She's just pointing out a practical problem. The problem is that you're not, everybody knows you can't just go to the king to beg. So that's the problem. So Mrs. Rosenzweig said, we don't know. Professor Rosenzweig, we don't know. Was Esther always motivated, or was she motivated by Mordechai? If she was motivated by Mordechai, then part of the brilliant plan is that Mordechai had to motivate Esther. He had to get the spy to be motivated. And then Esther was able to carry out her plan. But according to the other interpretation, Mordechai's plan was a total bust. He tried to do it. Esther had no interest in doing it. It didn't make any sense to her at all. And therefore, we now have the new plan, Esther's plan. Gather all the Jews who were found in Shushan, and they should fast for her, and they should not eat or drink for 3 days, day and night. And she's going to fast. Her maidservant's going to fast. And then she'll come to the king without any permission. And if she's lost, she's lost. I shall perish, I shall perish. She is ready to die for the Jews. Again, it was such a quick transformation because of one speech, she decided to sacrifice her life for the Jews, where 5 minutes ago she was going to hide. So maybe no, maybe the Esther was always Esther. But we don't really know. Mrs. Rosenzweig pointed out that this is the first time Esther speaks in the book, so we don't know what she was like before this moment. But still, someone who's capable of making such a wonderful plan. That's amazing. So first part of the plan is fast. Presumably, when you don't just fast, you pray, although it doesn't say that. And that she's going to, she's ready to go. Now, it sounds like she's following Mordechai's plan. She's going to go and beg for the Jews. It sounds like she's following Mordechai's plan. We all know, though, that when she gets there, she says, if you'll do me a favor, she says, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to a banquet. And then when she gets to the second banquet, she says, if I find favor in your eyes, you king and Haman should come tomorrow. So the question is, why the delay? What is Esther's brilliant plan? She says, she finally gets an audience with the king. He does give her the scepter. So now it's time to follow Mordechai's plan, beg for the Jews. But she said, no, Haman and Mordechai should come to the party. She gets the will of the king. He comes to the first party. And then you'd think, okay, now it's time to beg for the Jews. Mordechai said, beg for the Jews, do it. No, she says, if I find favor, then the king and Haman should come again tomorrow. And tomorrow I'll tell you what I want. So what's going on? Why delay? What is her brilliant plan? Why is she delaying? So Ibn Ezra says something I think makes a lot of sense. Ula fidati, according to what I think, she decided to postpone her request on the first day from the first banquet. Ba'avur shelo ra'ata shumot. She didn't see any sign. Shechidesh Hashem, that God renewed or God made some sort of new factor. Ba'avur tani Israel, because of the fast. She fasted. The Jews fasted. Nothing new happened. Kasher asah b'yom sheni dvar gedulat Mordechai chazak liba. However, on the second day, when she sees that Haman, well, she doesn't know about Haman, but Mordechai got a parade, then she says, oh, something is changing. The wheels are turning. Something's going my way. Now I can ask for the Jews.
Mordechai had a parade. That's something I didn't know about.
You know about that. Haman was forced to give a parade for Mordechai.
Oh, well, I thought that was later.
All right. No. It's amazing. It happens in 2 minutes. First, there's a banquet number one.
So yes.
Comes to the banquet tomorrow. That night, the king can't sleep.
Oh.
So he reads the book. He says, how did I thank Haman? I didn't thank him. Then He says, well, and then he said, well, who's around? Oh, Haman's around. What do you say? What should I do to honor somebody? He gives him an idea. He had the parade.
After the parade, after
he's completely down, dispirited by the parade, Haman is forced to go to the parade in that condition. So since Esther saw that there's already been a parade in favor of Mordechai, therefore, things have changed. It's time to go for the plan. So is Esther enacting Mordechai's plan to beg? She just puts another twist that firstly you have to pray, you have to fast, then you have to get the king to sort of wonder what's going on. Why? What is she hiding? What does she want? Why does she want me to come to this party? What is she going to ask for tomorrow? There's a lot of suspense. So she's building up her plan in a new way that Mordechai never suggested. She's on her own at this point. And she doesn't even ask the first day. She asks the second. Now, the intricacies of Esther's plan are brought out by the Gemara Megillah. I want to share with you the Gemara Megillah 15b, where the Gemara really lays out how brilliant her plan was. So the question was, says over here that Haman and the king and Haman should come to her party. So the question is, Haman is trying to kill the Jews. You're trying to beg the king to save your life. What do you want Haman for? Keep Haman out of it. You and your husband can have a nice little lovey-dovey moment. You can ask him, hey, honey, why don't you save the Jews? Haman won't be anywhere near there, and then you'll still save the Jews. You want Haman to be standing around, hovering over, as Achashverosh has to decide the fate of the Jews? Why would you want to have Haman there? So the Gemara has many answers. I think it's 11 answers to this question. And that's what I want to share with you. Rabbi Elazar says, she hid a snare for him. She made a trap, a booby trap. As it said, let their table become a snare before them. As she assumed that she would be able to trip up Haman during the banquet. Right? Pachim Tamano, she's setting up a trap. Something will happen. In fact, when Haman is there and he tries to beg Esther for forgiveness, to save her life, his life, Haman falls on the bed. So that was she tripped him up so he'd slip. He slipped on her bed. And when Achashverosh walks in, Haman is leaning on the bed. So she set that trap that Haman is on the bed. I believe that trap was set in a different way also. There's a seduction here. If you get invited by the queen to a party, then the fellow who gets invited thinks that the queen likes him. Then she changes her tune and says, someone's trying to kill me, and it's actually you. It's Haman. Then you have to change gears. Oh. She doesn't like you. She invited you here to trip you up. But he doesn't get that yet. So he goes to beg her to forgive him. But she's not interested in him. She invited him to kill him. So she actually did trip him up. She got his head full that he's being invited to the banquet. Nobody else, only him. And then he falls on her bed to ask for to beg of her. And the king catches him falling on her bed. Now, these were not beds that you sleep on. These are beds that you sit on. But same idea. Rabbi Yoshua in the Talmud says another answer. She learned this from the Jewish teaching of her father's house in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs is associated with Solomon. And Solomon is an ancestor of Jews. Mordechai and Esther have some Judean blood, although they're mostly from Saul. So maybe it's a direct ancestor. He said, what? What's the verse? Imra'ev sonacha chilei lechem. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. Feed the enemy. You ever hear that? Feed the enemy. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. And then, so you'll trip him up.
And give him water.
Sorry?
Oh, I was saying, and give him water to drink.
Okay. So,
I would say.
Yeah, water. So there's a question. So what's the logic behind this proverb? Is it, what? What do you think? What's the logic? Your enemy's hungry, give him bread. Is it to befriend the enemy or is it something else? In any event, we go on. Rabbi Meir said she invited him in order that he be near at all times, so that he would not take counsel and rebel against Ahasuerus when he discovered that the king was angry with him. Yeah, so if he's off on his own and the king is busy, she knew Haman. Haman is capable of taking over. Haman was an egocentric person. Haman was not interested in anyone. He wasn't a loyal servant. He was a problem. Esther is actually helping Ahasuerus to discover that Haman is not loyal. And she said, if I leave Haman out there, he could be out there plotting against the king. I've got to leave him inside. I got to have the spy right in front of me to know what's going on. Rabbi Judah has another idea. She invited Haman so it not be found out that she was a Jew. Had she distanced him, he would have become suspicious. Why isn't she inviting Haman? Everybody invites Haman. Everybody loves Haman. Everybody bows to Haman. Oh, she's not inviting Haman. Maybe because she's one of those people he wants to kill. And then they would know she's Jewish. And part of the whole trick is, part of Esther's attraction is that nobody knows what she is. So she didn't want people to know she was Jewish. She seemed more of a good anti-Semite. She seemed like a nice Jew hater if she would not invite him, if she did invite him to the party. That's what a Jew hater would do. That's what a typical friend of Ahasuerus would do. Nehemiah says, I'll tell you why she invited Haman. So that the Jewish people would not say, we have a sister in the king's house. We have a sister in the king's house. See, people might think, the Jews, we don't have to fast anymore. We don't have to worry about it. We've got Esther. Esther is taking care of us. We don't have to worry about it. Esther will take care of it. So they'll neglect their prayers for divine mercy. They'll forget to ask for mercy. But she wanted them to be on high alert. When the people found out that she invited Haman to the party, the people were appalled. They said, I thought she was on our side. I thought she was good for the Jews. Turns out she's bad. She invited Haman. Why would she invite Haman? The people were wondering the same thing. We're wondering, why would you invite Haman? When she did, the people said, oh no, we've got to daven harder. So that was part of her plan. Make the Jews squirm so they'll daven more. Another possibility. Rabbi Yossi says, she acted in this manner so Haman would always be at her hand for her, as that he would enable her to find an opportunity to cause him to stumble before the king. It's similar to what we said before. She would maybe stumble somehow. He'll be matsui labchole. Whatever she needs him for, he'll be there. In the end, what she needed him for was to point to him and say, this wicked man, he's the reason that I'm being destroyed. So it turns out that it was good to have him around. Rabbi Shimon Manasseh says, Esther said to herself, perhaps God, the omnipresent, Hamakom, will take notice that all are supporting Haman and nobody's supporting the Jews, and he'll perform for us a miracle. Now, this one always struck me as a very strange theory. If Esther invites Haman to the party, then Hashem will think that everybody's against the Jews, and the Jews will be in such a desperate situation, God will have to save the Jews. What's the problem with this? What's the problem with this?
Hashem knows what Esther was thinking, so...
Correct.
Nobody's getting by with anything.
Right, so it doesn't make any sense. Why would God think that? How could God think that? So, yeah, you'd have to say that even in her own heart, she was thinking, yeah, I'll just invite Haman. I'm not going to listen to Mordechai. She would have to like harden her heart to like be an anti-Semite, and that even she herself wouldn't know what she's thinking. And then God would think, what is this woman doing? Because we're all wondering too, what is her plan?
So she's under an assumption
that
God's going to do it anyway.
No. She thinks that she's not sure of God right now. She heard from her uncle that God will eventually save them, but she's not sure exactly how it's going to unfold. So she figures God will save us, but I need to put some more fire under God, so to speak, to get God really working on this fast. If I sound like an anti-Semite, then God will get worried. But the question is, God knows her heart, so why is he worried?
I see.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Sounds like it sounds like a little child who's having a temper tantrum because he wants something. And it's something that the kid would have gotten in an hour from now, but since the kid is screaming and crying, the parents are going to say, oh, we need to address this right now. So, I don't know. That's what that sounds like to me.
Right, but the problem is God knows God won't fall for the trick.
Oh, but
the parent falls for it.
Okay.
The parent falls. The kid is like, I'm not really upset. I just want to get my candy now. And the parent's like, oh, the kid is so upset. I better give him the candy. Right?
The parent God knows.
God knows if you're faking.
Yeah, but God is merciful. God is all loving. So God can't, I don't think God can take anything such drastic action.
I'm not sure. Any event, this is a very difficult one. So Rashi has another interpretation. He says, Inami, yargish ani tzricha lachnif rasha zeh vizilzul ulazel bechvudi. What God will think is, God will say, hey, look at poor Esther. Well, I take notice of her. It's terrible. She has to invite Haman. You know, she has to invite Hitler to the party. I mean, look what we've come to. Esther, this wonderful, righteous woman, is inviting Haman to the party. This is terrible. I've got to do something about this. So that's a second interpretation of Rashi. It's not such a great plan, but it's interesting. At least it doesn't involve God not understanding what she's thinking, which would be interesting. She'd have to hide it from herself. Okay. Rabbi Shulchan Aruch says another theory. I will act kindly toward him and thereby bring the king to suspect that we're having an affair. She will do. She did so in order that both he and she would be killed. Essentially, Esther was willing to be killed with Haman in order for the decree to be annulled. In other words, I'm going to give a little wink to Haman. Oh, she's always inviting me to the palace. And indeed, we hear Haman saying this. He says it to his wife and his friends. Now, I always point out that it's not very nice to tell that to your wife, right? If you think that there's a woman, a married woman who's interested in you, so you tell it, you brag to your wife, oh, the married woman's interested. Why is he telling his wife this? He told his friend. That's a different story. That's also ridiculous. But in any event, he tells his wife, and his friends, she didn't invite anyone except for me. So this plan worked. She acted kindly toward him, and he himself thought he was having an affair with Esther. And then the question is, did the king get suspicious? And yes, when the Haman by mistake fell on the bed, or because he was begging her, fell on her bed, Haman Achashverosh felt he was trying to steal Esther from him. So it did work. And he would end out killing both of them. Rashi says it's possible that she wasn't trying to commit suicide over here. It wasn't a suicide mission. She was thinking, look, he's going to kill, let's see, Rashi says, if there's a decree and one of the people involved in the decree dies, then the decree is over. So since Achashverosh and Haman had made the decree, one of those people died, the decree is annulled. So maybe that would help if they would both be killed, but when Haman is killed, then they'll annul the decree. You know, if Achashverosh changes his mind about Haman, maybe he'll change his mind about the decree as well. See, the problem with this, Rashi's dealing with the following problem. Let's say they're both killed. So now, all right, but then they're going to kill the Jews anyway. You can't change the decree. So Rashi says, no, one of the rules is that if one of the people who makes the decree, namely Haman, is killed, then when it dies, then the decree is off. So that'll change things. Right, it avoids the whole thing. But here we see that when she said she's ready to die, she's ready to die, right? That there's a certain suicidal mission type of thing going on in this situation. Of course, it's forbidden to commit suicide, but for a national situation, it might be permitted. Rav Gamliel says, Ahasuerus was a fickle king, and Esther hoped that if he saw Haman on multiple occasions, eventually he would change his opinion. So she invited Haman, and then she invited him again. Rashi says, he always changes his mind. So I could seduce him, and I could get the other guy killed, however, I've got to get this decree annulled right away, because I've got to get Haman out of the picture. Because if not, today Ahasuerus will say, "Oh, honey, sure, I'll never kill the Jews," and tomorrow Haman will talk to him and he'll say, "Oh, I'll kill the Jews." So I have to get him here to get him killed, so that he won't be around, so that Ahasuerus doesn't change his mind. I've got to have Haman right here to get him executed right there. Or the king will say, hang that man, and then it'll be over, and there will be no further lobbying against the Jews. Because if you every time he's lobbied, he'll go this way and go that way. So he's too fickle like a pickle. Okay. Rav Gamliel said, we still need Rabbi Lazar Modai. There's an expression that we always need Rabbi Lazar Modai. It's like E.F. Hutton nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Everybody needs the words of Rabbi Lazar Modai to understand why Esther invited Haman. As it was taught in a bright time outside source, Rabbi Lazar Modai, the Modian perhaps, said, she made the king jealous of him and she made the other ministers jealous of him. And this way she brought about his downfall. You see, now we get into that minor character. We mentioned there was another candidate for saving the Jews, and that was Harvona. When Ahasuerus is trying to decide, should I kill the Jews? Should I kill Haman? Should I kill the Jews? What should I do? Should I listen to Esther, my beloved queen? Or should I listen to Haman, my best friend? He's trying to decide. So he walks outside. He comes back in. So Harvona says, oh, by the way, that guy you made a parade for, there's a big gallows in the backyard of Haman to kill that guy. So then that was it. Ahasuerus said, fine, hang Haman on that tree. Why did that guy Harvona say that? Was he Elijah the prophet? Was he an angel coming to save the Jews, telling Ahasuerus that Haman is a bad guy? Haman's against you. He's against the people who save you. He's against Mordechai. Or is that guy a jealous officer? That when Haman rose to such power, and when Esther keeps buttering up Haman that only he gets invited with the king, all the officers are jealous. So when they have an opportunity to do him in, they said, oh, by the way, Haman is a bad guy. He's trying to kill Mordechai. Mordechai is a good guy. You just made a parade for him. So therefore, Haman is a bad guy. And therefore, Ahasuerus decides to kill Haman. So you want to get all the officers, instead of bowing down to Haman, you want them to hate his guts, so that when any opportunity comes to undermine him, they will undermine him, as things work in a palace. As Bloma said the other day, Esther knew how a palace worked. Mordechai's plan to go beg the king, that's not a plan. She knew the jealousies, the feelings, she understood. Rava, another rabbi in Talmud, he said the final theory. Esther invited Haman to her banquet in order to fulfill that which is stated, prize goes before destruction. Before you have destruction, you have pride. So she boosts him up, and she knows that when someone is boosted up, he talks egotistically. Someone who talks egotistically will say the wrong thing and put his foot in his mouth, and he'll be done with it. Verse in Mishlei and Proverbs. And I'm sorry, one last theory based on a story of one of the Babylonian kings. It says, when they were heated, I will make feasts for them. I will make them drunk that they may rejoice and sleep in perpetual sleep. Rashi says that there was a king, Belshazzar, who was hanging out, and he came back from war, and Daryavesh and Koresh were fighting against Babylonia, and they beat Belshazzar. So there, Belshazzar was very tired and hot. So he sat down to drink. He got drunk and he got killed. So Esther thought also, they'll sit around drinking and something bad will happen to them too. So people are drinking. God helps people have a good time. If they're evil, he does them in. So the question is, we had 11 different theories as to why Esther did what she did. Esther's brilliant plan. Which one is true? They asked Elijah the prophet, who's right? And according to whom did she make her brilliant plan? And Elijah the prophet said, Esther acted according to all these theories and all these reasons stated by the Tanaim, the early rabbis, Namoroim, the later rabbis. Elijah the prophet is saying is that her plan was so brilliant, it had all these elements in it. The king is fickle. The king will be jealous. The other people will be jealous that she wants him to be there. He's gonna trip up. He's gonna get hurt. He's gonna fall down. All these she's gonna trap him. All these theories, they're all part of the brilliant plan of Esther. Finally, we need to look at God's plan. God also had a plan. So what do you mean God had a plan? What's God's plan? So says that Haman came out. He was very happy. So Haman comes home. He tells his wife, tells him all his wealth and everything. And he says, nobody was invited to the party with the queen except for me. And he says, oh, but Mordechai, so pathetic. So Zeresh gives him a great idea. That was providence that she told him to make a tree to hang Haman. And she gave him the idea to go and ask the king for permission to kill Mordechai. So, but just that night, the king had a dream. The king couldn't sleep. The king wanted to read the books. And that's where he finds out about Mordechai and asks that Mordechai be given a parade. And he asks for advice. Haman gives the advice about giving a parade for somebody who did good. And it turns out that Haman actually made the suggestion to make a parade for Mordechai. So one might argue that God brought this about, that night, Ahasuerus couldn't sleep. Just that night, Ahasuerus remembered what he forgot. Just that night, Haman was coming to kill Mordechai and ends up giving a parade. It all worked out beautifully. So who's that? That's part of God's plan. The rabbis have a way of telling this God's plan story with the insertion of angels into our story. I have a video about this. But here's a nice list. And I thank Lily Morris. She once gave a bat mitzvah drush about this. And here it is. Why didn't Vashti want to come to the king's party? How did Esther become the queen? Because Vashti was killed. Why didn't Vashti want to come? The Gemara says that there was an angel, Gabriel, who made her a tail. That's why she wouldn't come to the party. So the reason Esther came to power to save the Jews was that Gabriel gave a tail to Vashti. Furthermore, the king didn't know what to do with Vashti. How did he decide? He got his seven closest advisors. And who was the one who said they should kill Vashti or get rid of her? It was Mahuman. The Midrash says that it was Gabriel, the angel. He suggested to get rid of Vashti. Another Midrash says that all the advisors were angels, etc. Then Esther decided to try to save the Jews. Ahasuerus had to recognize Esther with his golden scepter, or she'd be killed. What made the king spare Esther's life? So the rabbis say there were three angels. One angel lifted up Esther's neck so she wouldn't be so crestfallen. She was fasting too much, right? She wasn't looking so great. Another angel made her full of grace and love. A third angel stretched out the king's scepter so it would actually go to her. The king was like, should I put the scepter on her or not? And all of a sudden, an angel came, stretched out the scepter, touched her head, free sailing. It's another Midrash that the angels made Ahasuerus look at Esther. He didn't even want to look at her face. He had to turn in the right direction. And that night, he couldn't sleep. He has to see the Book of Records. When he realized, when he was reading it, he came upon the part about Mordechai saving his life. He realized he hadn't rewarded him. What made the king awake from his sleep? The rabbis say It was the sleep of the angels that was disturbed and the prayers of the Jews. Others say the angels kept waking up the king saying, you ungrateful person, you never paid back that guy who saved your life. The angels woke him up. Esther invited the king, then later on, Esther invited the king and Haman to two parties. The second party, Esther went to Ahasuerus and told him their people were sold to be destroyed. He asked her who had done such a thing. She pointed to Haman. The rabbis say that at first she mistakenly pointed to Ahasuerus. She said, who decided to kill the Jews? And she points to Ahasuerus because he's the one who decided to kill the Jews. So an angel pushed her hand to point to Haman. Ahasuerus is part of the plan to kill the Jews. An accusation against Haman is an accusation toward the king. Angels made sure that he didn't take offense at her words, and he didn't think her accusation was toward himself. He said, oh, Haman did it. Oh, fine. Ahasuerus doesn't connect the dots to say that Esther is actually against his own decree. He doesn't think that. Because the finger is pointing at the other guy, and the angel pointed the finger in the right direction. How did the king decide whether to listen to Esther as queen or to believe Haman, chief advisor? He went to the garden to think about it. When he was in the garden, he saw workers who were really angels pulling out trees from his beautiful garden. He said, who told you to do that? And they said it was Haman. So this made Ahasuerus even more mad. And when Ahasuerus comes back from the garden, he sees that Haman fell in the bed. He was mad. What made Haman fall in the bed? The Gemara says an angel came and pushed him. At this point, everything seems to be going great. In fact, the Jews defend themselves against the enemy. Then the king told Esther that he heard the Jews killed 500 people and the 10 sons of Haman. At this point, we're not sure whether Ahasuerus is happy about that or not. The Gemara says he was about to get really angry with Esther and the Jews for killing so many people. But then an angel came and slapped him on his mouth and prevented him from saying hateful words. Instead, he asked Esther, what else can I do for you, dear?
Is this the Gemara?
That's a collection, Joel Fingstein's collection together, Lily Morris, a collection of all different Midrashim and Gemaras where they put angels back in the story. Okay. So they show the hand of God. They show God's plan to save the Jews, where it started with Vashti and it ends all the way at the end of the story. That there are angels throughout the story. Really, the Gemara's way of saying that the hand of God is throughout the story making the things happen that happen. So who Vashti saved the Jews? So in the end, who saved the Jews, right? Well, right? It was Mordecai's very primitive idea, go beg out the king. It was Esther's very brilliant plan to make everyone jealous, stir up the pot, and come out with a beautiful tzimis that would come in the favor of the Jews. And it was God's plan to make it happen, to make all the pieces fall into place when things were about to teeter and go against Esther. And everything would just fall in just in the right place because God was behind it all.
It sounds like Ahasuerus was not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
So let's, I just want to officially conclude the video part of this presentation. I want to thank everyone for joining us. And that goes to show you that the plan to save the Jews was on the one hand, a not so thought out plan by Mordechai, a very elaborate plan of tremendous thinking about all the intrigue and all the personalities and all the egos of all the people thought by Esther. But let's not forget that ultimately, without the hand of God, otherwise known as the angels who act or simply messengers of God, the story would not have come to the fruition the way it did. So thank you for joining us. That concludes the formal part of the program.